Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley. Sean Keane. Hello, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sean, brand new guest to the Keith and the Girl universe. Also, so good. Let's do it twice. Emily Walsh, new to Keith and the Girl. Hello, Emily.
Hello. How are you?
I am good. I heard recently, Sean, your stand-up album. It's great. It's called America's Uncle Dad. And fairly recently, I saw Emily Walsh doing another one-person show, Dad Girl. I enjoyed both. Let's get yapping. First, I saw this, by the way. I'll start with this. Sean, on your Instagram, you post like your joke list, things to jog your memory. Do you comics ever get nervous if somebody comes across your joke list, like you'll be arrested or something? I've made joke lists, of course, and I'll draw a dick. One time I wrote, kill Jews. And then I'm like, what if this does get found? I have to write, don't kill Jews. Now I'm running out of space. do you ever think like somebody will find your list and be like, we're going to put these people in a hospital?
Yeah, because I would, when I lived in San Francisco, I was very, I worked at a nonprofit during the day and I'd perform it. And I'd try to do as many sets as possible. Sometimes I'd be a little hammered. And then I would write down great joke ideas on the bus. And the worst one I think I wrote down, usually I would have a notebook. This one I wrote on the back of a transfer.
Okay.
And I just remember this cracking me up and finding it the next morning. I wrote Jamba Jews, like the religion, and then in parentheses wrote like juice, and then juice was underlined twice, and I have no idea where I was going with that, but I feel like it's kind of offensive but mostly confusing
in this class.
And obviously the worst one I have is when I was in college, we decided to launch our new series of stand-up shows, and we picked just an early Tuesday in the fall semester in 2001. That's right. Tuesday, September 11th, 2001 is when we launched the series. And because it was 2001, we sold tickets with cash and gave people receipts and had no list. We had like no way to give refunds. Right. So we felt like we needed to do the show or be arrested for fraud. And Emily, you can maybe relate to this from stand-ups. We also still did the open mic afterwards. There were still 11 or 12 comics lined up to do 5 minutes after a full show. And I was hosting that. And I have you can see on my Instagram, there is a post-it note where I've written my jokes for the 9/11 open mic, which is maybe the biggest example of too soon I can imagine.
I see here Bin Laden crashing cabs into World Trade Center.
Yeah, they're also racist. That's the other thing, is that they are offensive. And then there's a note about David Copperfield that doesn't make any sense. And I think the idea was that it would be revealed to be an illusion because he made the Statue of Liberty disappear. Okay. I don't know.
Wow. Day of. That is impressive.
There is video of that somewhere. So,
well, you have to acknowledge it, right? I mean, you have to do something.
Yeah. Well, and I was really respectful and nice at the beginning of the normal show I was hosting. And then the open mic, I was a monster, apparently.
That's the time. I'm not worried about ever being arrested, but I am worried about being committed if somebody finds my right. Like every time I have a new joke notebook and I'm writing down just my set list, every time I put my like email or phone number at the beginning in case it is lost, I'm like, should I do that or should I just let this be lost? I put my name on this?
Yeah. Did you just sign a warrant for your own 5150 commitment there?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't like in my Apple Notes, whenever you first start it, it does a giant font, like I'm writing chapter one, and I'm like, a crazy subway rider, and then I turn to my left, oh, Jesus, that was huge. Red shirt, blue pants, don't forget. Yeah. Oh, shit. That's huge. Well, we have to talk about more news. God found the real killer. O.J. Simpson passed away. Cancer, 76. He gets to be reunited with his wife. That's nice. Do you guys like 9/11? You remember where you were during the car chase?
I was a little young. I remember seeing it and not, I didn't really grasp what was happening. I don't think I fully, what year was it?
94, 90? So it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was 8. So I was just like, okay. Oh, we're watching a car on the highway. I'm not sure why.
95 million people happened to catch that car going so slow and so far. And then a year later, he was found not guilty. In 1997, there was a civil trial, and he had to pay $33.5 million, which for some reason, the Goldmans can't get his football money. So he doesn't, he's not paying him, or he hasn't paid him. But $33.5 million, that's a lot of money for not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Like, good, but I don't get it.
It really seems like in the civil suit, the defense's whole case should be this whole trial was on TV.
Right.
And we got a not guilty.
So what are we at the end for? Of it? Right.
Yeah.
Then it's like, well, you need less facts for the civil case. And they go, yeah, well, then he did it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll point to the chart. Remind me how you think he did it. Yeah, I don't know. It seems we don't have to care too much this time. $33.5 million.
My favorite thing is that he did end up going to jail, but for a very strange,
he stole
memorabilia armed robbery.
Now
yeah, he stole back his own memorabilia, and that's what he went to jail for. And that's just very weird.
Yeah, with a gun. If there wasn't more than just him, but he had a gun for sure. He was on charges of kidnapping. He was putting these people that were selling the memorabilia, not letting them leave the room. Is it because of the second thing he's found guilty for that people, and I assume too, but is it because of the second thing that you assume the first thing definitely happened? And is that why he's not beloved? He is hated. Mike Tyson is in movies. Tyson was found guilty of rape.
But he 100% did it.
I agree.
I'm coming out hard stance. He definitely did it.
Do people really think Tyson didn't rape?
No. I guess not, but he has a face tattoo, so that changes things. I don't know.
is Tyson charming? We have audio of him multiple times saying he's gonna rape a boxer in the ring, saying he punched Robin Givens in the face. It was the best punch he ever threw. He's gonna eat your children. This guy does have temper issues. He ate an ear on live TV. The guy does. So what? Why is he given a pass as opposed to an OJ?
I actually think it's because Mike Tyson's reputation was always that he was this psycho kind of killer guy. Even in his boxing career, it was like, oh, this guy's a maniac. Whereas OJ, it was more of a difference between a guy who was just really smiling and chuckling along with Bob Costas all the time in comedies where he just didn't seem it seems like that was more of a fake out, whereas Mike Tyson, while somewhat beloved, is still like a guy who just does drugs all the time and has a face tattoo and he's in The Hangover. It's still weird, but with OJ, it's I think it's just more different than what people were expecting from.
Yeah, he was like doing those, doing those Hertz ads, just running through the airport, smiling, and then all of a sudden
you tricked two us. But the other one was always clear. He's an animal.
Or it's because OJ also killed a man, and we don't care about women a whole lot in this country. Mm. So OJ killed two people, one of them not being his ex-wife. Right. And so you don't get a pass for that.
Right.
It does seem crazy in hindsight that it wasn't like this was really a secret that he'd been arrested for domestic violence. It was just that no one cared. Like, his employers were fully aware of this. And it was still just kind of like, OJ.
Right.
Just very strange. Yeah.
I saw online a woman that worked for, I think it was the Kardashian lawyer. And before this trial came up, before the murders happened, OJ, the college OJ went to, USC, along with Robert Kardashian, paid for two women to keep their mouths shut about a rape from OJ Simpson. So now it seems people have non-disclosure things we didn't even know about that they can talk about now.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100% believe that. No problem at all believing that.
Yeah. One of the strangest things to me was that OJ kind of reinvented himself as basically doing the same thing he would do on NBC's NFL show, but just on Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter
just kind of like hanging out on the golf course, right, talking about how great the Buffalo Bills were doing. No acknowledgement of there being any reason he wouldn't be doing that on TV. And he was prolific, too. It was just very strange to have OJ talk about, like, well, you know, Lamar Jackson should win the MVP, but let's see if he can do it in the playoffs. And kind of like, these aren't irrelevant points, but it's just very weird that you're saying them, OJ.
I'm sorry, but lunar eclipse, I don't see the big deal. Sorry, Twitter world. Yeah. Hey, I'm just saying. Okay, murderer.
Yeah. I just remembered this. I completely forgot this for 20 years. I went to college with OJ Simpson's daughter. She was a freshman. When I was a freshman, she lived in my building. And I remember my mom finding out and being terrified that OJ was going to murder me. Like, she was like, steer clear of that girl. And I was like, I don't think that I am in the danger zone. I'm not going to meet OJ. Yeah. But I haven't thought about that in at least 10 years. And she was like, she literally was like, stay away from her. Like, don't be friends with her because you don't want to get mixed up with OJ.
I guess you got to say something. Like, I'm going to sound dumb and I'm going to sound like an old mother, but maybe don't let OJ kill you. There, I said it.
Yeah.
At least I said it.
I put it out there. Yeah.
I remember changing your diapers. You need told sometimes. Yeah. Don't party with OJ.
Still the weirdest thing OJ did was making a hidden camera prank show in the mid-2000s. Do you know what it was called, Emily?
No, I missed this entirely.
It was called Juiced.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Like, you got juiced. Yeah. And
you just got juiced. And then you would get killed brutally.
He would go and, like, try to test drive a Ford Bronco. There's a sketch he does in Whiteface.
If he actually hadn't done that, then that's a fun redemption arc. But he's like 100% did
that. No, he definitely did it. Yeah.
So it's just really fucking weird. Because I knew he wrote the If I Did It book.
Right. Yeah.
And that already, he couldn't make any money from that, I think. I think all the money from that did go to the Goldmans because he wasn't allowed to profit from, because if you, even if you're committed, or maybe he was. I don't know
if the book was done. Because the woman, Regan Books, and for her name being in Regan Books, I don't know how you get in trouble. But anyway, they were discussed that she's also one that put out, like, let's say Howard Stern's book. So she likes to be edgy, is my point. But she got fired for that. The company knew the book's being made. It made it public that the book's going to come out sometime. People were so mad at the company, they had the pretense to fire the head of it. And I don't even know if people really have a copy of this book in their house.
Yeah. I mean, the pretense of the sketch show is definitely that OJ is a murderer. And there's a lot of sketches where people are like surprised by OJ.
I saw a real
video. Like a woman's flirting with a man and then he shows up and it's like, oh no, the murderer's here.
Oh my God.
And that's the joke. That's the joke.
I did see him take a banana. This is true. And do that like stabbing motion. Ha, ha. So I did think that way too, Emily. I'm like, what if he didn't do it? And you know what? Fuck everybody. I'll make my book. I'll make my fucking jokes. Yeah. Fuck you.
Just walking around wearing teeny tiny gloves, being like, it couldn't be me.
Yeah.
But I do
like have some fun with it.
I remember thinking I did. Kind, you know, like these people who were like, I don't know if this is true, or is Chick-fil-A really homophobic? Who's to know what's what and what's not? And I think people just like making excuses to make life easier. My point is, if I was kind of hoping that I wouldn't have to have much integrity in life if O.J. Simpson didn't do it, if it turned out that way, and then I could be like, hey, who knows anything? Maybe kids aren't making my iPhone. Who the fuck knows anything? But no, I think he did it. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The OJ apologists, the new thing is that, oh, well, he definitely had CTE from his football career.
Oh, sure.
It's kind of like, maybe, but he did live till he was almost 77 years old. Right. Like, he's actually seemed pretty lucid giving his, OJ's hot take of the week.
Yeah.
Also, beyond all of it, like, even if he hadn't done it and he decided to do the sketch show, your ex-wife, the mother of your children, was still murdered.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still fuck with, but you're so pissed. Well, you're upset because she's dead. So now it's like, fuck you extra. It's almost like the world that, killed
oh,
her.
Okay, fair.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so now you get to do whatever you want.
Now we're going to fuck shit up. and coincidentally, I want my memorabilia back. That's totally separate.
Totally separate. That is my football. I would like it back. Thank you so much.
A jury, you might recognize O.J. Simpson from a court case some years ago. Like, oh, this again? I think this is different. I think that's the point of the law. This is totally different.
I think if he had not done, if he actually was innocent of the theft, he still would have gotten to jail for it at that point, though, because it was enough years later that public perception was like, oh, we let this man get away with murder.
Yeah. So I think we got to get him now.
We got to get him like fullest extent of the law for this thing. So that must have been weird, too, to be in prison and see OJ show up like his first day and be like, wait a second. Wasn't he free? How is he here?
He has to be shocked. He had to be. Like, I got away with double murder. The biggest trial of our lives, perhaps. You know, I guess Nuremberg would be second, but I wasn't alive during that. This is great. So you get away with this, and then you're like, oh, I can't steal my own memorabilia back? Well, obviously, I'm not going to get in trouble for that. Yeah, you're going to jail for that one. Get the fuck out of here.
But that's my stuff.
This should be some kind of double jeopardy. I got away with that, and you made me crazy. Now I don't know what I can do and can't do. I can't. It's my face on the poster. And I don't care.
There's a fair amount of serial killers that have gone down for like parking tickets. So it kind of makes sense. Like Ted Bundy finally got arrested because of a broken taillight. So, you know, we get him how we get him.
Yeah, they're like, OJ, look at it like your Lifetime Achievement Award.
Right. Yeah, it's Al Pacino's Oscar for Scent of a Woman, where they're like, we forgot to do this years ago when it was really appropriate, but this is the makeup. Well, this is your makeup prison.
They did the same thing with DiCaprio. They were like, leave us alone. Here's an Oscar. Leave us alone. You did it. Please, calm down.
I wish instead of just putting him in jail, they did like little pranks on him, like, they're like, do you have the verdict? And they give him like, you know, the jury hands OJ like a dry bologna sandwich. They're like, what's this? 13 months. Yeah.
Grade A bologna. See you later.
See if this fits in your mouth, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, his prison jumpsuit's a little too small, and he tries to put it on, and the warden's laughing, everybody's laughing. He's like, you got me. Don't make me mad.
He's in the chow line, and they're like, do you need a knife? And he's like, what? And he's like, just kidding, no knives. Keep moving.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that here.
Yeah, just soup for you. Sorry.
and other horrible news. The Golden Bachelor, Gary Turner, and his wife, Teresa Nist. So I guess they made love work. Fuck! I didn't read the whole thing. They're getting a divorce.
What?
Three months later, the sanctity of marriage on daytime public
my gosh.
TV.
Ugh.
It can't even be taken seriously anymore.
Did you guys watch The Golden Bachelor?
No, and thank God.
I did watch The Golden Bachelor. I don't even really watch The Bachelor, but it's hard. I don't have like a lot of shows that I watch with my partner, and that was one that we got into, and she liked it. Her mom was watching it. We could talk about it with Ellen. And right before the finale, a lot of skeletons in Gary the Bachelor's past came out.
Because I watched up until there were three women left, but I was watching behind the schedule. I wasn't watching with the people, and I also don't watch The Bachelor, but I got roped in because people kept talking about it, and at first it seemed very pure of heart. I was like, all these cute little old people, and all the women that got removed, because The Bachelor, when they're 23, they're insane. They're all terrifying. But these older women... they were so sweet because they were getting kicked off and they were like, well, at least I know I can love again. At least I know I have the next chapter of my life. And it was so honestly lovely. But it got down to the last three women and I got a spoiler as to who he picked. Mm-hmm. And I think she's nuts. I don't like Teresa. I'm not a fan of Teresa. And so I just stopped watching. I didn't watch the last two episodes because I was like, I don't care anymore. I'm out. He picked the wrong lady. So I'm kind of okay with them getting divorced, but I am curious about these skeletons because I didn't hear about what he did wrong.
So, well, the premise of the show basically is that he is a widower and he needs to go on the show to find love, and he's just been lonely without his wife. Turns out, had like some girlfriends, like had a live-in girlfriend that broke up with right before the show. And so he's got all these questions where women are kind of like, so, because The Bachelor ends with a fantasy suite. Keith, did you know do you know about that?
I know about fucking.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. Nice. And for some reason, your normal batch of Bachelor contestants, you kind of like, you know what you're getting into. Like, maybe it's uncouth for The Bachelor to have sex with all three remaining women, but we've been in that for a couple of years. When it's like women in their 60s, it feels dirtier for him to be like, I had this amazing connection with this woman, and then 18 hours later, I nailed someone else's grandma. And
because they're all grandmas, and they all have been either widowed or divorced for like years. Like all of these women have not really been dating. So they are all putting all their emotional eggs in this basket, and he's just nailing them one by one, just going down the line.
And they don't have that many as is, right? Eggs?
Yeah.
None at this point. From what I know from science, they are all eggless. So it is tough times for these ladies.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with him apparently going on an erotic journey after his wife's sudden death. But he definitely presented it in a very different kind of aw shucks Midwestern way. But then you look at him and you're kind of like, well, he's probably had some Botox. Like, he's definitely dyeing his hair. He's driving a convertible. This is like, if you think about it, it's like a man pretending not to be divorced. He was like a divorced man, not a widower, I would say.
I think, honestly, the reason people gave him the benefit of the doubt is because he has daughters, not sons. And his adult daughters were on the show being like, we hope dad finds love again. If he just had a bunch of adult sons that were like, we hope dad, you know, gets it wet again, that would be disgusting. Like, but it was just presented more, and it was, they kept showing him sitting alone on a bench being like, my wife is dead. And the perception was definitely like they were high school sweethearts. And in my mind, I was like, this man has not had sex with anyone else his entire life.
He
was with his wife. She's dead. And now we're all hoping he finds love. But that apparently was not the case.
He seemed like he maybe like did Pilates and yoga too. When you thought about it, you're like, hey, he's in really good shape. He's not doing that to be alone.
No, not at all.
Should legally, they have to live together for at least a couple more years, like legally.
Yes. If you get married on TV, 18-month minimum,
I think.
Or you have to go to jail for a little bit.
Yes.
Like for maybe half the time, a weekend. Jail.
Right.
Yeah. It could be like a work farm or something, but at least an ankle bracelet because you can't do that to America, to ABC.
Yeah.
To the Disney Corporation.
And that fucked with my phone, the algorithm. Now everybody thinks I love game shows just because I saw an old person on the street. Okay, you got me invested. Now don't fuck me. There ought to be a law. There ought to be a fucking law.
I do think they can't do the golden. Do you think they'll do the Golden Bachelorette?
I don't think enough men are keeping it tight. I don't think enough men are in shape. We don't have 20 of that guy. Like, that guy was really putting in the work.
Right.
And the thing with men, the reason they get remarried, there's like studies on this. So many men get into second marriages.
We forget how to make a sandwich.
Because they don't know how to take care of themselves. Literally, because they don't know how to take care of themselves. So they're like, fuck, I got to go to Walmart, pick up another wife. So it would just be a really different, it would be a lot of desperate, sad men.
Right.
It would be such a bummer. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe if they give that, because typically the Golden or the Bachelorette is someone who made it close to the end and then they're given a season. So if they give it to the woman that I liked, maybe I'll check back in. Uh-huh. Maybe. But I do think it would be the men would be real sad.
I think also you'd have a lot of men who are way too old for it, who have had like 2 or 3 years trying out Tinder. And I feel like that creates a horrifying kind of man and not one on TV. Also, the when you were talking about the incompetence of a widowed or divorced man, all these women are like, well, my husband died and I felt lost. And then I became a very successful stockbroker, or like, oh, I opened up my own business, and the men would just kind of be like, well, I finally bought jeans by myself last week.
I've been eating pudding for 3 months and I need this woman to make me a proper meal.
Yeah. And my house is filling up with, I've almost bankrupted myself with DoorDash. I don't totally understand how it works, but the food just shows up.
You know what? Yeah, no. We do need them, don't we? I did buy jeans recently. I bought women jeans. I didn't even know it. How did I end up in that section? I don't fucking know. I'm like, well, these are fun and weird, but all right. They hug me. Okay. You know, because women need to button it the other way. Yeah. Of course. That's what separates us. Mm-hmm. Sean, in your album, you were talking about somebody you dated, and you said, like, oh, it's a polyamorous relationship. At least, you know, she let me know later on. Do you still talk to this person? And did it work out that way? Did you really just catch her cheating? She's like, no, I said we're open. You don't remember that conversation?
Well, you know what happened? Actually, it's maybe too sad to go on the album. I did catch her cheating, and then which she didn't really even think was cheating. And there was a horrible experience where I found out I was being cheated on while being invited to have a threesome. And then,
oh, so did she's fucking somebody as she's texting you, hey, should we have a threesome sometime, like now?
Well, she was like come over, it's 1 a.m, I want to have a threesome with you and our friend,
and this guy, and then happens to be here
and like bring over some vodka, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I guess my girlfriend wants to try an experiment. And then, like, when I arrived for the threesome, she was telling me about someone she had hooked up with earlier in the night who was also a comedian. And it was like the nightmare version of the, I'm not really a threesome person. I think you can kind of tell with my face even. And it went from like me just being like, yeah, let's have this freewheeling sexual experience to like, wait, that guy? Oh, and I was like, I just left sad and did not.
What was worse, that it was a guy or that it was a comedian?
Comedian, I think, actually. Like, that's like, it's a different class of human being. And that's like, that's the brutal thing, too, is like, I want someone who's with me in spite of me being a comedian, basically. Like, that's what I, because if you want me to be a comedian, I'm kind of like, it's okay if you approve of it, but like I try, like the sign of a serious relationship for me is that I really make you wait to see my actual act. Like, obviously you can find it by stalking me on the internet, but there was a point with my fiance when she was going to go see me perform at a game store, like a game store that normally would be hosting people playing D&D, but had stand-up comedy once a month.
Yeah.
And the show's fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's also, you just never know how many people are going to show up for a comedy store at a D&D store, you know? And she was going to see me for the first time at this place and got offered tickets to go see the Golden State Warriors instead.
Okay.
And was so apologetic. And the whole time I was just saying, like, please go to this game. Please go. Please do not. You're definitely going to be seeing something really good. And luckily she got to see me at like a real comedy club opening for someone who was running their TV special before a taping. So it seemed extra classy, even though I was just booked because they're like, you're probably not going to swear. Right. I'm like, yeah, that'll be fine.
Yeah. It's like if you went to her job and you're like, okay, whatever your work is, it's going to be the same, but your desk, really?
Ooh. Yeah, exactly.
Those are the comics you put.
That's what you do in the break room?
Like, yeah. I constantly feel like I tricked my husband because we started dating and I started comedy 2 years after that. So
I hoodwinked
him. Yeah, I honestly feel really bad about it. I'm like, I fully, like, we moved in together and like a week later I was like, I think I'm gonna try stand-up comedy. And he was like, that is not the life I had planned, but okay. Sure, good for you.
I liked Sean was talking about dirty talk and he just feels stupid doing it. I get into it, but I get what your point, you know, when they're like, whose pussy is this? Like, you know, it's you know, it's my pussy. I'm the only one here, usually. Yeah. You know. do you ever get into it now? You're obviously with somebody new. It just sounded like
I feel like I would dirty talk more if my cardio was a little bit better. I've started doing the Peloton recently, but I just feel like I need to focus on the thing I'm doing.
Right.
And also in general, I'm sort of self-deprecating. So I'm not going to be like, you like this. I'll like comment on something weird I did, or like, who breathes like that? You know, like that's not erotic for anybody. Like, you don't want someone on the verge of an apology inside of you, basically. That's
after sex, she sees your sex set list. Like, wait a second.
Yeah, she's like, wait a second. He's reusing this material. I've heard this 5 minutes before. Is this? It's like, well, you know, it's not TV clean, but this is my A material here.
Your mom had 4 kids in 5.5 years, you mentioned.
She did.
Do you guys have kids?
We do not have kids. We've only been together about 2 years. We have a dog.
How about your siblings?
My siblings have 3 children combined. One of my sisters, I have 3 nieces and nephews, and one sister has 2 children.
There's 5 of us, never did we have kids. And when you're a parent, do you take that personally? Because you should. You know, my parents should go, oh, something happened that 5 kids aren't interested in kids.
I mean, I was more just bad with relationships and had dated people who. Well, I mean, like, I just was sort of like such a bad dater and human being, like in my late 20s, where I would do artistic things and worked at a nonprofit, but like had not really dealt with clinical depression. And so there was a point when I really feel like I was approaching my 30s, and all my parents knew is that they had not really met any serious girlfriends for a long time, and that I had had a vibrant musical theater career as a young man. And so my seemingly very Catholic parents suddenly had a lawn sign urging people to vote against the gay marriage ban in California. And I thought, like, wow, they really turned it around. And then I thought, oh, this is just to make sure these grandchildren, hypothetical adopted grandchildren that Sean and his eventual male partner will have.
Right.
And they really turned it around. And I mean, like, I could understand them changing their mind about gay marriage. They live in the Bay Area and everything. But the lawn sign almost seemed like they were just reaching out to me. Like, you can tell us anything about.
We heard your three-way story.
What you're
story.
Secretly doing. Yeah. I was living in the Castro in San Francisco as well, in a very gay neighborhood, and just was just bad at dating, you know, like just was kind of slovenly, didn't take care of myself. And like,
Have they met your girlfriend now?
Yeah, I love her. She's great.
Did they act shocked or?
No, because they'd met a girlfriend before. Like, I eventually had a girlfriend when I was in my 30s for a long time. And they were kind of like, oh, thank God. This is, we weren't suspecting anything at all. And this is a woman. This is definitely a woman he's dating right now.
You were a swimming coach for kids.
Mm-hmm.
That always makes me wonder what kind of brain, and not only because all these lawsuits keep coming out, I'm like, well, what kind of adult wants to work with kids?
No, it's like, it seems very weird to be a high school swim coach, which is sort of strange. I just kind of, my mom was a preschool teacher, and so, and I had 3 sisters, so we essentially had a little like preschool to babysitting pipeline that went on. And then a lot of the kids from the preschool also went to the swim team. So it was almost just like, since I was 12, my side hustle was always like babysitting and swim lessons and then swim coaching. But I have to say, the first year I was a head coach was the year I turned 21. And it is just very strange to be in charge of like 10, 16, and 17 year old girls when you're 21 and you don't know what you're doing. It's not like anything was inappropriate, but it's still just a really weird situation. Like, I was both too old and not old enough at the same time. And
anybody have to say like, oh, and you catch somebody bleeding in the water. Like, do you, you know, did anything happen? You're like, I wasn't trained for this.
No, it's just like, it's very uncomfortable when a 17 year old is flirting with you, but as a joke.
Right.
So and it's just like, and I was not confident enough anyway, but just like once like teenagers of any kind sense like fear and hesitation, you're just dead. You have to be a lot cooler. And it was just like, it's just a weird choice for a man to make. And it makes sense because it's like you are a swimmer. It's the thing you do know how to do. But I think I am good at turning like a 7 year old into a county champion. And when it's people that know how to swim, I wasn't that good a swimmer. So sometimes I'd be like, well, you're a better swimmer than I am now, even though you're 13. So I don't really have any tips.
Do they say, do I have swim to keep fast? Coming to class? Right.
Yeah. They're like, well, he's fun. He doesn't really yell. So that was the main attribute I had, was willing to really relate to little kids and then not yelling at the older kids, basically.
Tell Emily the team name.
We were the Forest Hills Beavers.
Oh my God.
Wow. There's, were you still in the Northwest? I feel like that the Beavers is like a pretty common team name over there.
Yeah. And you can tell that everybody wants an aquatic animal, and sometimes they don't do the research as to how well those creatures swim. Because I coached a team called the Seahorses. Yeah. And the seahorse is the slowest fish in the world. They basically don't even move. They just like stay in one little part of the water their whole lives. And yeah, they tried to call them the fighting seahorses. And I unfortunately was like, they barely have a defense mechanism. They're not fighting anybody.
No. Here. Was that a girls team or a boys team?
It was mixed rec. It was like ages four to 18, but there's very few boys who stick with recreational swimming. Like the ones who are swimming still at like 14 or 15 are doing year round things on, you know, right, AAU teams and with future Olympians. So you just end up with these teams that have, you know, in the 15-18 group, it's 14 girls and maybe one very intimidated young man. and so it's like, it's very, you just don't really have very many boys after about age 12 in that. So yes, it was a co-ed team, but over 12, it was all lady beavers. You know what I mean?
Sean wore he had a t-shirt at the time. It says, mm-hmm, I've got beaver fever.
That was my work shirt.
That feels so like
every single day of the summer.
Not okay.
I mean, I think it was good that I was only 21 and I looked like 12. So it was kind of like, well, this is inappropriate, but he's not old enough to know. But if I'd been like a 25 year old man wearing that every day, it was already off-putting, but it kind of looked like I just didn't understand it rather than,
it was
being like a sex criminal.
What if basically you were the originator of like those shirts, you know, liquor in the front, poker in the rear? What if it's you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big Ivy Johnson
fever.
They're still making them. They're all like NASCAR and country music oriented, though. I looked it up. And also there's some big dog shirts that have ventured into politics, too.
Like,
well, you know, the big dog shirts, Emily?
I think so, but I'm not 100%.
It's like, if you're not willing to run with the big dog, stay on the porch, and then there's a big dog. And it kind of doesn't make any sense. It's like expressions they're making up. Because like Big Johnson and No Fear shirts are also for weirdly aggressive young men.
Right.
But those use like existing slogans. The big dogs just kind of insert big dogs in a way that no one would say. Like, you just never talk about big dogs, but sometimes they there are some like post 9/11 big dog shirts that are just like, a big dog says, don't tread on me. And you're kind of like, wait, what?
Yeah, that all of those shirts to me have a real Woodstock 99 vibe to them.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Like breaking white, stuff.
White men mad about nothing. Just like, I am aggressive and here's my t-shirt about it. Like,
and we're going to sit on some dirty cement right now and listen to Stained. Yeah.
There's,
yeah,
there's a dog was, behind barbed wire. And it's like, yeah, never, yep, never again.
Yeah, I remember when Trump won. I live in New York City, pretty liberal place. I work in TV, pretty liberal medium. And the day Trump won, a lot of us came in. We were sad. We were processing, whatever. And all the carpenters came in with these aggressive fucking t-shirts that they must have already owned.
Yeah.
And just never felt like they could wear to work. And I walked in and the first guy I saw was had a shirt with like a cartoon Trump on a motorcycle. And it was like, if you don't see that bitch Hillary, it's because she fell off the back.
I was like, I am a new. And it's that era. Wordy too. They yes, fell off the yeah. back and that's why you don't see her, because she's a bitch.
Because she's on ground and we don't like her. Boo, boo her. And
why Trump rode like, with her in the first place, I'm not sure, but... She's not here.
Why did they end up on this motorcycle? Why couldn't you get a sidecar? So many questions. But either way, she's gone.
I like that also Sean's t-shirt. You know, these are homemade shirts. So it looks like you designed it yourself.
Yeah,
you...
it absolutely looked like I'd just been there. And I had more than one because I had to wear them every day. Sure. And just homemade Michael style iron on letters. Incredible stuff.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. And they had one that mid-season they brought us one that they tried to make it look like kind of like a Lacoste polo, okay,
right?
But instead of the alligator, someone had used like a puppy paint fabric thing to make a beaver outline instead of where the alligator would be, you know. But the problem is that a beaver does not have a real discernible silhouette the way that an alligator does.
It's just lumps. Yeah,
and they made it brown, so it just looked like a big turd on the front of my shirt. And luckily, they were so amateurishly made that it just fell off on the second wearing, okay, much like Hillary on Trump's motorcycle.
Just fell right off.
That bitch fell off.
You, Emily, in your play, congrats, by the way. It's called Dad Play.
Thank you.
Not Dad Play. It's called, what's it called, Dad?
Dad girl.
Dad girl. Sorry, dad girl. You talk about your dad passing away. You were in fifth grade, I believe. Is that right?
Summer between fifth and sixth, yeah.
And he had a stroke but now this is almost 30 years later. It sounded, when you got to these points in your one-person show, that your voice was really cracking. Not out of nervousness, out of sadness. Is that true?
That I was sad?
Yeah. That it was legit sadness, and it's 3 decades later.
Yeah, I think so. I think that the show, you know, it's telling like literal facts about the situation, but I think part of it, you know, every time I do this show, I did in Edinburgh last year, and I think a lot of the emotions have to do more with like growing up without a dad than it does necessarily. Like, obviously, I miss the person that was my dad, but I think a lot of the emotions are linked to so many other parts of that, just all the elements that come with your family kind of breaking down in that way. And I think, you know, it's something, it is almost 30 years, so it is something I'm not thinking about on a daily basis, but they're still like very real emotions. And I think like doing that show too, because like I brought that show to Edinburgh and all the reviews were interesting because people were like, yeah, it's a dead dad show. We've all seen a dead dad show. But this show is also so much about like how much Emily like loves her husband and how much like, because I think really the crux of it too, because part of it is discussing, you know, whether or not we're going to have kids. I think a lot of it is like me not anticipating having a family as an adult. And now I'm in a situation that I never really anticipated. I was just having like a very loving husband, being in like a healthy partnership. So I think it's like, I think a lot of things are mixed up in that. But yeah, it's still pretty real to me. There were days in Edinburgh where I could definitely disconnect because I did it 30 days in a row. Right. So sometimes you're just like saying things. And there are definitely jokes I do in my normal act about my dad being dead that are not emotionally driven to me anymore. Like I'm just saying them. I know where the punchlines are. But yeah, I think doing that show, and I think for me as well on Monday, the show that you saw, It was the first one I had done since the summer, and my summer venue was really shitty. And Under St. Mark's is just a little, you know, theater hole in the wall, but it's a theater and it's meant to do shows like that.
Yeah.
And I think it was like very cathartic for me to do it in a space it was meant to be done in. And I also just like literally am exhausted. I've been working a ton of different jobs. So I think Monday I did come out of that feeling more emotional than I have in about a year doing that show. And I think it was just a combination of a lot of factors, but I think it was just partially just really satisfying to do it in a space that it can thrive in and to hear people enjoy it. Because the venue I was in Edinburgh was this big, long, weird white room. So even if people were having fun, I couldn't feel it coming back to me the same way.
I see.
And so I think being in like this little space, just really enjoying performing it, did make it a little more emotional in the time. Yeah.
You're like, I got to paint this whole fucking room black. God damn it.
Yeah, well, basically. It's,
my fiance is also an Emily who lost her dad at a similar age. And the thing is, it is just feels so profoundly sad, especially because your dad died really suddenly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her dad had a heart attack while golfing. And people thought he was like doing a bit about a bad golf shot. And but we've been talking about, so we're getting married soon. And there is a song that she and her mom and her brother always associate with him. And we were just talking about, you know, when to play it in the ceremony to honor him, but not make everybody cry at the wrong time.
Right.
And just talking about it and listening to the song, we were both just sobbing. And it's just, it's, I don't know. It's very easy to find that on the surface. And it's not like she's always going to cry when she's thinking about her dad. But when you really like, I think you made a really good point about how it's like, it's the totality of your life without having your dad, you know?
Yeah.
And, and I'm sure the wedding is very much like this is like the time I would want my dad to be here, like more than anything.
It's funny because I have a joke in the show about it. With the second you lose your dad as a girl, people are like, who's going to walk you down this aisle? How are we going to get you? And I was 11 and I was like, why are we having this conversation? Like, what the fuck are we talking about? Obviously, that would have been nice. Obviously, I thought about him a lot that day. But it's fascinating how much people are worried about that. People have asked me that for 20 years. As soon as I got to dating age, even before I was even like with anybody, they'd be like, well, who do you think you would want? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. What are you talking about? It's bizarre.
It's like 17 steps ahead. But my Emily also got that all the time. And just like, well, what are you going to do? And she's kind of like, well, I'm also none of your business, but
yeah. It's also 15 seconds of my life. It's gonna be fine. We're gonna work it out.
She's having her brother is going to do it. So I think which is the natural thing. She has one brother. She has one close male relative on that side. So
well, I hope you announce it first. I don't want to be there like, what the fuck?
Who is
that's your dad? They're like almost the same age.
He has got a great skincare routine. This man is keeping.
He should be on the Golden Bachelor.
There you go. Exactly.
It took me a while to put this together. So when you're saying fiance, you're saying current girlfriend. Now your album just came out when you were single. This is long.
I know, it's crazy. It's moving fast. So we've been together like 2 years, and I recorded the album 2 months before we met, something like that.
Okay, funny.
And so it's a lot of jokes about, you know, my inherent unlikability. No, but I have some jokes about, like, I had a long relationship that had ended like a year and a half before that. And also just coming out of the pandemic, I feel like my whole life just sort of reset. Like, I live in a different city. All my jobs changed. Like, we went to just for a look at how good the timing of my entertainment career was. We made a sketch pilot, my friend and I, and we're going to sell it, starting at the end of February in 2020. So we had a lot of March 2020 meetings scheduled, and those meetings did not happen. But The one service that was very interested in working with us was Quibi, which which did not survive May, I don't think, of 2020. I've done a lot of work with streaming services that people think are pranks. I have worked for Tubi, CISO, and got into extended talks with Quibi. So that's quite a hat trick.
Is it just that, you know, we don't recognize those names like we do with CBS? But yeah, all those, it's, you see those names, you know, like, no way. It's
gonna, I mean, not real. CISO is like, so you're naming your channel something that sounds like so-so?
Yeah.
It's not like...
I think you need to steer clear of anything that ends in a vowel. It sounds like that is a sure miss. You got to go with an Amazon, a Netflix, something with a hard consonant ending.
Yeah, it's like funny words. You want those hard consonants in your punchlines, too. I think Fox maybe bought Tubi to keep it alive, but it's a depressing thing to say. It sounds like, you know, a children's host who eventually gets outed as a sex offender. Like, oh, did you hear what happened with Tubi?
Tubi, you have to, it sounds like you have to give them a little money up front for processing.
And yeah.
That'll put you on all the things. Sean writes for SportsCenter. Is that correct?
I wrote for ESPN the magazine for a while. Okay. And I made some bad decisions with my social media. I never thought of them. I think people who are a little bit younger than me will just choose their own first and last name for their internet handles, which makes sense.
Right.
I was from an era where like, my first college email address was Mistman, MYST man, and people would think, oh, that's the computer game. You like Myst. Mm-hmm. And no, I had played the mysterious man in a high school production of Into the Woods and then had to explain that I was a bigger dork than they had already assumed I was. So my original Twitter handle was LL Cool S for Ladies Love Cool Sean. And it's because my nonprofit was like two blocks away from Twitter, and I thought, this is the dumbest thing in the world. I'll pick the dumbest name in the world. And then later, I happened to be performing when a Twitter person was in the audience, and I was complaining about that, and she goes, we can actually change that. So my Instagram handle is Jort Center, because I also thought that was funny. And then I had a Tumblr page that was Sports Center, but with the last E out, because I don't know anything about branding. I try to make the most confusing. I had a 5-year comedy show in San Francisco called The Business. Impossible to Google. Like, I don't know if we could have chosen something less helpful than calling it The Business. George Center was just a sketch I had done with my friend Alex Cole about, we had eaten some legendary Dolores Park weed truffles and gone on a camping trip, and then listed pages and pages of news stories that would arrive if there was a show called Jort Center. And it would be like, Steve woke up in a Denny's, like things that happen when you're in Jort. Being asked to leave, corning a dog, crossing a freeway on foot. And we were very entertained by this and finally filmed the sketch. And now that's my Instagram handle. And it's also what my fiance's friends from work refer to me as, because that's where they were checking me out before they actually met me in person.
They go, so hey, it's say,
hey, how's Jorts doing?
Okay, old Jorts.
Who's Jorts?
What's
Jorts up to?
So you know these sports. I do have everybody's talking about basketball now, of course. It's the middle of April. I do have a basketball question. Why?
Oh, just why basketball at all?
Why?
I mean, originally it's
2 points, 2 points, 2 points, 2 points, 1 point, 3 points, 2 points, 2 points, and it's down to the wire and 2 points they want.
Yeah, I think they just wanted sports where young men weren't maiming each other all the time. I think that's actually the reason for basketball is that people are literally dying playing college football at this point. Right. So we need it's all like, well, we just have this one room that's a little bit warm, and fruit gets delivered in these baskets.
It does seem legal reasons. Yeah. Like to show America's not a bunch of animals, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And, It's strange. I like basketball a lot. I was terrible at basketball because I'm 5'8" and was not even 5 feet tall when I got to high school. So my basketball career, and I'm slow. So I wasn't good at any of the things that I could shoot free throws, but I still just really liked playing, but I was terrible. Gotcha. And none of the, like, I can't even imagine dunking on like an 8-foot hoop.
See, and ironically, I'm so good at it. That's the thing. But I could just tell.
Yeah.
Do you have a sports podcast?
I do. It's called Round Ball Rock.
Okay, so he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, and which is, again, terrible branding because that is the name of the song John Tesh wrote as the theme song for the NBA on NBC. Luckily, he is not litigious. There was an article. It's been public enough that I think he doesn't need to garnish our Patreon for that. I don't think Tesh is like a pod. I think Tesh might actually podcast, but it's all about like mindfulness, and he's like a real new agey guy.
Emily has two podcasts at least, right? Alone at Lunch.
Yep.
And
is Alone at Lunch and Yeet the Rich. So Alone at Lunch, we talk to comics. We've been doing it about 3 years. We're on Wondery, and we talk to mostly comedians, but occasionally other people about a time they felt like the odd one out, which has really just evolved into a junior high nostalgia podcast where people shout about their bullies, but we have a good time. Yeah. And then Yeet the Rich I do with my husband, and it's more research based. And we talk about billionaires and what they say they've done for the world and what they've actually done to the world.
Your latest one, for an example, is the Sacklers, the people behind the opioid epidemic. That's going to be an 82 parter, it seems like.
It'll never end.
I don't care for these guys too much. But
Emily, you should come on because we have a recurring feature where we talk about you should come on and judge our worst NBA owner pageant.
Oh,
which is all terrible billionaires and figuring out what they've done.
Well, it's funny. There's so many billionaires that also own a sports team, which I didn't know until we started this podcast. Like some guy from Johnson & Johnson owns the Jets. Like people just end up buying sports teams, the kids of these billionaires, because they don't know what else to do. And it's kind of a weird, fascinating like phenomenon that just keeps happening. I'm like, oh, and they also own the Seahawks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're just amazing vehicles for money laundering, for one.
That makes sense.
And they're only regulated by the leagues, which are just cartels of other billionaires. So there's a lot of like, yeah, it's fine. You can buy that on credit or like,
why not?
I don't understand why you wouldn't want the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund to own 10% of your team while also asking the state of Virginia to build you a free arena. Like there's nothing weird about that. We're all friends here. Yeah. There's
interesting tax things happening there.
There is a crazy amount of NBA owners who specifically worked for Drexel Burnham, the stock firm that invented, massive amounts of stock fraud, and also the place where Jeffrey Epstein got his start and maintained friendships with all those guys. So
yeah, that's just a bad soup right there. That is too many things happening.
There's just a lot of people who own NBA teams and have been on those flight logs, I think.
So we got to the answer, right? Basketball, why? And now we know.
Money laundering.
Money laundering.
That's a bummer. All right. What is it? The Sackler story always fascinated me, and I try to think why. Like that's fascinating to me. How blatantly they were lying about their medication was fascinating to me. The people that played dumb under them was fascinating to me. That is, I guess, it's just the rich and powerful getting caught. I enjoy when a powerful person finally gets busted for rape. That's an article I read the whole thing of. I didn't know until I was an adult how many women were raped. I don't have a story like this necessarily. I am an alcoholic, but pills never bothered me. What is it though about this? That is it? Just it's so big? Is that a dumb question? Why am I so attracted to this? Dope Sick was fantastic. Painkiller, the TV show, was good. Pain Hustlers didn't even bore me, and that was the slow one of the group. Why is this so exciting?
I think there's a lot of elements to it. I think it's partially that the Sacklers specifically do not give a shit. Like, there are so many people that at least pretend to apologize, pretend to care, right, give $1 million out of their $10 billion to whatever. The Sacklers have never given any money to everybody. They've never apologized. They refuse to. They put their heads down and they push forward. And like, the people, the wealthy people in that family, like, they're, next week, we're going to get into it. They basically realize that they're going to be screwed eventually. So they decide to just pull all the money they can out of the company. So they take all the research and development money. They're like, we need to pull $700 million out of this company in the next 5 years to continue our lifestyles. So figure out how to do that. Like, they are just unabashedly like, fuck you, fuck off. We're rich. We want to stay rich. And so there's that element of it. And then there's just the fact that, like, they just said it was safe. They just kept being like, no, 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 we're good. It's safe. You can't tamper with it. You can't. And the moment that it became a heroin issue is because in 2010, they created the quote tamper-proof pill. Because the whole thing was that with the previous pills, you could crush them, you could snort them, you could inject them, whatever. So they create this other thing that you can't, if you try to squish it, it's like a Skittle. You can't like get it into a powder. It's like, okay, a chewy thing. And they were like, see, we fixed it. And that's the same year that so many a third of those addicts turned to heroin, because they were like, I can't snort this anymore and I can't afford to continue to be on the black market. So I'm just going to start doing heroin. And that, it's crazy. It's just wild. And I think, you know, with Oxy too, there's so many stories of people that you're like, they were fine, they were doing great, they had a back injury and now they're dead, or now they're, you know, addicted. Right. So it's one of those things that it's so pervasive that everyone has been touched by it. Everyone knows somebody that has gone down,
sure,
from it. And so I think it's just a unique situation. And I think they, again, the Sacklers just kept trying to keep their hands clean. They were like, it's the addicts. It's not the stuff. It's, they're all criminals. They've all been addicts the whole time and they are hurting us. Like that to me is what fires me up so much, is the Sacklers claim they were victimized by this epidemic. They were like, our sales are hurting. That's not us. And the reason like the show is so compelling is because the sales reps are all these hot young people that are just like, fuck it. We're making money. We're going to dance and like go out and, you know, who cares? And so just so many parts of it wrapped up in this. You can't, it's like a car accident. You can't look away.
And then there were other companies too. That's interesting to me. Like, maybe I learned it in Pain Hustlers. It was not, I don't think it was the Sacklers. It was like a smaller group, but still, you know, once somebody figured out some evil shit, it's not hard to find and copy. And so, yeah, the opioid thing. I do love those TV shows and a fan of your podcast also. So it's called, Yeet the Rich. You do it with your husband and, yep, we get to shit on these fucking trillionaires. That's exciting to me. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's fun. And we sometimes do topics that are a little less depressing, because people are always like, oh, we love the show, but I can't listen to more than one episode in a day because it's a bummer. But we get, you know, we did like a 3-episode arc on the guy who invented Beanie Babies, and he's still a billionaire. So if you're interested in that, you know, we go all over the place.
I saw that movie about Beanie Babies, and it seems like he's a piece of shit too. How about a nice billionaire once in a while?
We're not going to discuss them because I don't know.
Because I can't find them.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, there's probably ethical millionaires. I don't think there's ethical billionaires. I don't think they exist.
Yeah. If there's somebody had a joke, if somebody's a billionaire, they killed somebody.
Yeah.
Somehow they killed somebody. And
yeah,
they're pretty responsible.
Yeah. They're complicit and they're moving on. They don't care. They're on their boat.
So here's what you want to do. First, with Sean Keane, you want to download his podcast. Give me the name again, please.
Round Ball Rock.
Round Ball
you
Rock.
You can find it on Twitter at Round Rock Pod.
And the album is available also, and that's called, of course,
America's Uncle Dad.
That is correct.
Because I seem like a dad, but I actually have no children of my own. Just those vibes. Sometimes I tell people some sort of have widower vibes, actually, where they're like, there's a deep sadness. I can't identify with this band. And you can get that on Apple Music or Bandcamp. It's from Blonde Medicine Records.
Well, congrats again. You should be proud. And congrats on the engagement as well.
Thank you. Thank you. That's more her. But
I'll put her on. I would have started with her. also, you want to see what Emily's up to, the two podcasts that I mentioned in the show that I just saw, and I was pleased. And Apparently, you're supposed to see it right away before, you know, she starts getting their head like, oh, good, my dad's dead. You know, now it's still kind of fresh again. She forgot. And everybody wants to see people crying. Of course, it's called, why don't I have this again? Dad, sorry.
Dad girl. Dad it's like girl, girl dad, but backwards. Right. You're almost there. Yeah, you got it.
In my notes, I wrote dad play down just to remind me. And then I'm like, I keep going, it's not dad play.
It's not called dad play down.
That's why you got to make dad these.
Dad play down. Yeah.
You got to make these no. lists.
It is Dad Girl. There's three more shows, the 13th, the 17th, and the 18th. If you're in New York City, it's part of the Fringe Festival. And if you're not in New York City, all of those performances are streaming, so you can watch it in your house. So, yeah, Dad Girl, I am on The Funny Walsh on every platform that you can be on, and there all of that information is in all of those places.
Excellent. Thank you both for your time. Very nice meeting you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's it. We'll talk to you soon. KeithandTheGirl.com.